powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Naomi.
To the mystical world we live in, discovering the secrets of the hidden realms. What lies behind the appearances that meets our five senses? Those things that one has to know through your inner senses, that the mystics and the shamans and the seers of old have traditionally been bridges for. We are very, very glad that you have joined us today, and we have with us Rogier Chardet, one of the masters from Europe that has been assisting me with these shows. And Rogier, welcome. I hope you have some good questions for us again today.
Yes, well, I hope so too. Should we start right in?
Yes.
Okay, well, the first question is basically asking about what exactly is the nature of disease and how do afflictions like candida or cancer arise? I think we probably have to keep in mind here the idea that disease is not real anymore, so maybe you should explain that as well.
Of course. So, we have explained on some of the previous shows, and I don't know how many of the folks have managed to either go into the archives or were online able to listen to us live when we did that, but in August of 2006, we were actually able to solve everything about the infinite being that had previously been unknown, whether it was part of the infinite or not. And that means that illusion was solved. Discordant frequencies in the cosmos were solved in that the frequency of anger, pain, protectiveness, as well as, fear. They were removed and replaced by pure frequencies. So what then was the case is that the real part of disease had disappeared. So it no longer had a counterpart in the cosmos that it was reflecting when it was in our bodies, for example. So disease then became something that we either chose by choosing certain attitudes and emotions and perceptions, or not, because every being was then pristinely remade by the mother of all life, who is the one infinite being expressing as the many, and the father is her first creation, and they function as a unit. But this was no longer needed if we lived in a way that reflected that which is, rather than that which isn't. So in other words, beautiful frequencies were given. If we could let go the old patterns that we had fallen into of relating it with fearfully or angrily or whatever to life or protectively, if we could live in the purity and pristineness of the infinite being at all times, there was no way that disease could have any hold on us. There's no way that we would catch it from another, for instance, or manifest it in our physical. But now, clearly, there are still people with cancer, etc., out there. And candida, as well, is very, very prevalent. It's a fungal overgrowth throughout the system. And when one manifests this illusion within the body, which is not a real thing, but dominoes fall over. So what exactly is disease at this time? This is what you are asking, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, well, let's take a look at the frequency of cancer. The frequency of cancer uses the body. It's a parasitic type of we will call it disease. We understand that disease right now is not real, but it is a parasitic type of frequency. If in our life we do not trust that our being is our sustenance, that from within we manifest all that we need. If we do not trust that, if we still greedily grab from others what we can, we are living a frequency very akin to the frequency of Cancer. And things would always show us in our language of our body what it is that we need to change. So we might get a little hint that something needs to be changed. If we continue to live parasitically off of others being users and takers rather than givers in life, or we give so that we may get, which is the codependence, which also is an obsolete frequency. If we do not then heed that warning from our body, then the warning becomes a little louder, and eventually we simulate the disease of cancer. And believing it to be real, we absolutely can manifest its symptoms as though it were, and then eventually it could claim one's life. If we look at something like Candida, which you happened to mention, that is the result of abandoning self and living a hollow life. In other words, we either live to make ourselves needed or useful or pleasing others, or oftentimes people forfeit life by their addictions. For instance, if we mindlessly work all day, then come home, mindlessly sit in front of the television, then go to sleep, and then do it all over again. And our idea of rest is perhaps mindlessly then sitting in front of football games during the weekend. We're really not living at all. And that kind of a thing, whether it's alcohol or drugs or whatever it is, it will create a vacuum. We've abandoned the self.
But that, interestingly, then also the definition of addiction, isn't it? The abandoning of the self.
Exactly. You're very right, Rogier. So it's really just like dominoes falling over.
All right. I think there was something else. I thought there was a related question there. But, oh yeah, actually I wanted to ask because the other day I was noticing that you had a little bit of a cold, so I was wondering what does that mean, which is quite unusual for you to have.
Sorry. We live in a household where, you know, my daughter's 8 years old and she has never been to doctors other than just to have a cut washed out that I thought they could do a better job with a little syringe than I could, but she doesn't even have a doctor, because we analyze what it means and then we let it go. It was the result of a day in which there was such a deluge of hostility and disrespect and negative emotions coming at me from people around me. It seemed to be very much directed at me, and it was very primary relationships, my children and so on. So I allowed it to affect my well-being. And if I allow outside influences of hostile emotion or negative emotion, blaming and, you know, disrespectful way of talking to one, if that is the case, then fluids that are phlegm-related fill, and because I let it get to me, it filled the sinuses, hence a cold.
Wow.
Our being is our sustenance also for our well-being.
Yes. Okay. The next question would actually sort of, in a way, tie in with the questions about disease. And it's really asking about the currently the big thing in esoteric spiritual circles, namely the so-called law of attraction, which is a universal law, but it's about the idea that we totally and fully create our own reality. Would you believe that idea to be correct?
Oh, we very, very much create our own reality. Let's take a look at how those laws of attraction work in terms of that. We cannot attract high-quality people in our environment when we deal with and live with that which is low quality. It doesn't work. We may, you know, eat healthy food. We may not let pop come into the house or colas. But nevertheless, if we promote in any way something in life that is not life-enhancing, all the healthy food is not going to do it. We're still going to end up producing a family with illness when there's toxicity of another kind in that family. So let's look at how the attraction laws work there. With matter, same attracts. That which goes through the matter of our body, for instance, if we send through resentment, victimhood, self-pity, self-importance, you know, if we send through resistance to life, these things negatively impact the physical form. And so matter actually lowers in its quality, if you will. Matter is not light-filled or spirit-filled or pranic energy-filled. It becomes very much obstruction to the flow of energy. When matter lowers in its quality, the quality of life that we pull in will end up being the same, because with matter, opposites attract. For example, if we are withholding in our love to those around us, you know, one of the Star Brothers from Andromeda once said that the pain you feel is the love you withhold, and at that time pain was a real emotion when he said that. But the withholding of love that people do to punish one another, it's incredible. Or their love was rejected at some point, and this fear of, you know, being rejected again. To just simply love the way the rose sheds its fragrance on the air, it will enhance our own body's matter. Now, abundant resources are pulled in because our personal resources of love and caring and so on is given abundantly. But we attract with matter the same that it is. The same applies to energy. When our energy is industrious, when it is enthusiastic, when it is applied to making the world a better place for ourselves and others each day, our world will continue to get better and better and better as new energy is pulled in. With energy and matter, same poles attract. That's why at the physical level, that which we are is that which our environment is.
All right, but still there seems to be different dimensions to this subject, because would you then say that 100% of what one experiences is actually created by yourself?
Well, let's tackle that one in a moment, because the point is I'm a few moments later than I should be here for the commercial break. But Rogier, thank you. That's a very good question, and we'll come right back to it. But first, a quick break for commercials.
The brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Almeen. The magical book answers a question: do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
Welcome back to the mystical world we live in, discovering the secrets of the hidden realms, that which lies behind the appearances. We have with us Rogier Chardet, who has very kindly compiled some questions to probe behind the appearances to those laws underlying existence. And here, your last question pertained to exactly how much of our own lives we manifest. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, let's tackle that one. There is a grid work that is for the good of the whole. That is a very small portion of our reality. In other words, at this time, the incredibly beautiful city that the Revelations calls the New Jerusalem is on the North American continent. There are palaces on other continents that also belong to the Mother and the Father gods and goddess. But it's not yet time exactly this moment for us to physically see it. So we're all going to live that same reality. The masters that meet in my classes have seen it. They've touched it. Some of them can feel themselves walking through it. Nevertheless, it's not firm enough that it would stop our hand when we reach out for it towards its wall. So when will it become physical? Well, it will become physical to all. That is an example of what Mother calls inevitability. So the inevitability of life is the overall picture for the collective whole, either the whole cosmos or the whole of humanity. Within that gridwork, which is a very small part of it, until reasonably recently, it was half of it. But it has changed. It is now 10% of our life that has been set in stone. So 90% of our lives, we are able to truly manifest from the heart. And there's a reason for this change. Do you think we should go there then?
Well, yeah, I think we should, because I didn't even know about this either, because I thought it was still at the 50%.
Yes. This has happened very recently.
All right.
So that's possibly why.
Well, please go there.
All right. We recently had an unprecedented event happen with the cosmos. It became self-sustaining. Mother gave every heart a free energy device, if you will. Every heart is now capable of sustaining life indefinitely, regenerating cells quicker than they are destructuring, which is immortality and eternal life. How much of that energy is produced is based on the three ascension attitudes, and we have another show, folks, that's called Windows into Eternity, Understanding Concepts of Ascension. And we have in detail discussed how love, praise, and gratitude works to pull in awareness. So that is part of why things have changed. We are grown up now. We are self-supporting. Up until recently, the Mother of Creation, which is the infinite being that is the one expressing as the many, sustained all life. She sustained every single creature out there with the limitless supply of energy that came through her heart. Her desire was that her children grow up, and that is now the case. So, with that responsibility, the gift of self-determination was given in larger portion. For example, we no longer have a destiny. Destinies were predetermined, set lives that we had to live out. Now, we create what we want through the heart. If something makes our hearts sing, we have just lived our highest truth.
Okay, and but I was wondering, though, previously would it have been possible that the parts that were like set in stone, so to speak, would include elements like disease when it was still a reality? Or would you say there that it's always created by the person who's sort of experiencing it?
The answer is it's always created by the person, but there is a but to it. So let's take a look at that. Firstly, disease is the language of pain. And in our book, A Life of Miracles, I've given in detail to the best of my ability what it means when fluids are involved, such as a cold, etc. And in fact, we mention even what finger is what, and so forth. Is there a specific disease that you want to mention, Ruchir?
No, not a specific disease, but I know that in my experience, whenever you mention something like creating our own reality, some people can get very upset, and then specifically over the, you know, this idea of diseases and, you know, that, you know, one could not possibly have created that himself. So I was just really having that kind of question in mind.
Well, disease literally is the language that prompts us and tells us what is out of place in our life. For instance, if we, you know, if we go around and stub our toe and then blame the chair, that doesn't work. It's telling us that we feel blocked from moving forward if it's the right foot in our left brain, practical side of our life. For instance, perhaps we have let taxes pile up or some such thing. So we need to deal with it. So that would create a stubbing of the toe. But some of these diseases that are so overwhelming are in fact the result of the acidity levels within the body. And our body is acidic when there is resistance to life and when there is resentment.
Wow.
That's when the dominoes start falling over.
Okay. I
forgot to give the little butt part, didn't I?
Oh, I thought that was
sometimes,
the butt part.
Sometimes when we have something the matter, like let's say we have not lived our life fully and candida is the result. Major light workers, which are in all likelihood the ones that are led to these programs that we do, because that's one of the promises that I was given by the mother, if I did them, the right people would listen to them. But major light workers, when they have manifested certain conditions in their life and they seem to not be able to get better, even though they do all this self-work for a while and then suddenly, you know, it starts to turn, that is because when they manifest it, because they themselves needed to get that message, it either is more aggravated or more prolonged if they do it as a way of transmuting a soul group's negativity or incorrect perceptions or whatever it is. But yes, in the disease department, we have done that ourselves.
Okay. Actually sort of just continuing on the similar themes, because what we've discussed concerning the law of attraction and disease so far, does it therefore follow that it's a sort of a good idea to, you know, devote a lot of time in our life to, you know, visualizing and affirmations and doing all this stuff to pull certain things into our reality?
The affirmations have traditionally worked very well. It has been quite essential to do them every day and not skip a day for a few months. But that is because progression was linear. Now, it's true, you can do affirmations if you feel there's an old stuck program, and they should always be due as an affirmative statement in the present tense. But it is possible to do it in the form of exponential growth. The master knows that they spin on a dime, that they can at any given moment decide that they do not wish to play this role anymore, they do not wish to see this in this way anymore, to get the insights, to change the perceptions, and to flip into an entirely new mode of living. That is now available to us. And the reason for that is that awareness used to travel in spirals that went through three very distinct stages. transformation, which shed anything that didn't serve, transmutation, that took the unpleasant and turned it into wisdom and insight, or took something of lower quality and made it better, for instance. Mindless work doesn't have to be just drudgery. It can be a mantra. It can be a beautiful meditation. It can be a dedication. The mind can turn, and something that was lead can be transmuted to gold. The third stage of change in a linear form was transfiguration. Because any being can only hold so much light before that being has to transfigure to the next level. So we linearly could trace exactly what stage we were in by the symptoms in our life, and we give this into Journey into the Heart of God, which is the second book that we produced. But now, we truly, if we get something, we can immediately change our lives in a very dramatic way. Change is fluid, exponential, and dynamic. If we then let go of the belief of the disease, we can do that as well. We can heal almost instantly.
All right, but if you look at things like, see, this has been, well, this used to be sort of a big question for me, how to find the sort of the balance between, actively working with all these techniques, to create your own reality, like to manifest this or that, and on the other hand, just sort of living with presence to the moment and not really trying to force it one way or the other.
Now, are you speaking of devices for healing, or are you speaking about having to work and earn a living?
The question was about visualization techniques and affirmations and things like that.
I see, as the outside techniques.
Yeah.
The techniques have lost a lot of their luster. Things like the Merkaba techniques and so on, as it is, Mother changed the ratio of the spin of the fields around the body. So she made many of those techniques obsolete so that people would not undo what well-meaning practitioners are doing. But so much of the body has changed, so much of the mind, so much of human DNA, because we literally are metamorphosing the species into superhumanness. So a lot of the old practices just don't work anymore. What works very fully is living with full attention to the now and finding in that moment every blessing that we possibly can. We should, however, take times in the day where we assess patterns of our day. Because I have found in my own life that I tend to put up with the unacceptable in the past, simply because I don't track it, because every moment is new. So I don't see how poorly people have behaved over how long of a period, because all I see is this moment. So I've taught myself to take little gaps of time, and how I know when that is necessary is when there's a ripple of irritation across the equanimity within. The little spots of irritation, I let them come. I let them come out. I let them vent because I want to look what they're trying to tell me, because there's usually something that I'm not assessing as a bigger picture because I'm living too much in the moment.
Right. Okay, well, that's interesting.
Oh, we have a commercial break time again. Please stay with us, folks, and come back with us afterwards.
A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back to the mystical world we live in. My name is Almin, and I have with us on the show today Rogier, who is asking questions so that we can probe what lies behind the appearances of life. Rogier, thank you for these very good questions that we've had so far. I've found them fascinating, and please continue. What would be the next question?
Well, I actually wanted to sort of look at something you very briefly touched upon earlier when you were talking about takers and givers, and I'm not sure if you've entirely collected your thoughts on the issue yet, but I was wondering how this has been in the cosmos, the takers and the givers, and what exactly would have been the function of, let's say, parasites on a cosmic level, and if that is still the case.
As we went into our ascension as a cosmos, led by the pivot point, which is the Earth, and in the book, The Gift of the Unicorns, the second half of the book is what I took down as dictation from the history keepers of the cosmos, a kingdom that had kept the history, and they gave me the history of the Earth and her people. So, according to that, we have been in very vast descension and ascension cycles. And it explains exactly how multiple cycles we've had to go over and over again because we couldn't quite break free. But we started to go into very major ascension, and it explains in The Gift of the Unicorns that the Earth actually is not, it does not have her origin in the solar system, and that she was originally, before the Big Bang took place and planets were shot through it, she was in fact the cradle of civilization. It is for this reason that she is chosen to be this incredible pivot point and man as the archetype of the macrocosm. So when the Earth led the cosmic ascension starting in February of 2005, we started to pull non-life-enhancing races into oblivion. They could see that it was coming because they were able to time travel only up until a certain point, and they couldn't go beyond it. And they also figured out that it came from the Earth, and every time the Earth moved up, they moved a little closer to their extinction. And so up until that time, and somewhat beyond that time of February 2005, we had tremendous interference and abductions and hindrance with the major light workers on Earth from them. But they were the ones that plundered and took. The history speaks of a time. Two planetary systems came and took metal out of the Earth that they just plundered and left holes in it everywhere, destroyed the environment even then, gave nothing back, and then just left. In one case from the Orions, it was simply depleted. In the other case, it was from the planet of Nibiru, and they didn't want to get involved in the politics that was going on at Earth at that time. But the bottom line of it is these are the takers, and bit by bit they were being pulled into oblivion. We are still ascending. So life and its creatures still is becoming more and more purified and more rarefied, in that the higher we rise, the less room there is for those that just simply take from others, that go around crying victim and what can I get from everybody, instead of saying what is the most I can give. The traditional question is what is the least I can give for the most I can get. This has to change, especially in the relationship that the Infinite Mother and Father now have with the cosmos, in which they want it to be self-determinative. There, nevertheless, there are groups of beings that will not take this opportunity and try and take from others. And I'm afraid, that the purging is not over yet.
Okay.
So that is yet to come.
All right. And you just mentioned briefly the subject of alien abductions, and we actually have a question about that, namely if phenomena such as well, alien abduction and demonic possession, if that still has any sort of root in, or is it actually still a reality, doesn't even exist anymore?
It has no reality because there is not a single solitary underworld left. The last thing that the mother took care of was in the, the first week, I believe, or second week of November, when she cleaned out the thought forms in the etheric realms. Because at some point, the physical and the etheric will blend. And we would have gone right into things that look as though they are real, but they're like ghosts left over from the past. So she cleaned that out entirely, but there is no more underworld anywhere in any planetary system. And so no more demons. Any aliens that have hostilely used humankind in order to study why they thought we would be the answer to their future, they have ceased to exist. There are benign aliens that want to actually enter and come and live here and come and talk to everybody and so on, but that also is not permitted. Because humanity is the archetype, when they come here and live, for instance, in the crust of the earth or behind an invisibility shield somewhere in the Caucasus or something, what we will end up having is a diluted human grid. In other words, it will be polluted by other planetary systems. And also, it is in our density where humans reside that the known meets the unknown. And aliens are not supposed to tell us how to live, because we are the ones that are at the cutting edge where all new information is gained, because it's gained in the flesh.
Right. But then we can safely conclude that all this, you know, all this stuff that we heard so much about the greys is really no more.
It is no more. I worked very, very intimately with that. It truly is no more.
Okay, and what do you, and I think this was actually a question a while ago, but which I never really got around to asking from one of the readers, but what do you make of this sort of, you know, I remember this being a popular amongst some New Age thought authors a few years ago, but this idea that, you know, with these alien abductions, that really it was some sort of contract that we had signed with, you know, them, and it was really just ultimately a very benevolent thing. What do you make of that idea?
Well, there were a lot of theories coming forward because absolutely no one knew what to do with it, nor the governments. You know, and they had made contracts. There were people on the earth at that time that lived behind the governments who are also no more. But they had made contracts that humans could be taken in exchange for technology, but apparently the contracts were not abided by, and they really didn't know what to do about it. No one knew what to do about it. You know, if you went to Native Americans, shamans, they'd say, oh, no, it doesn't happen anymore. They left a long time ago, yet people had all sorts of abductions taking place. And interestingly enough, Rogier, even after they were gone, people had abduction-type experiences because they had put memory implants into the brains of some of their victims, if you will, that would simulate abductions, keeping them from blooming and blossoming from the trauma of it long afterwards. So they didn't even regularly have to come here, as long as they just program into the minds that abductions were taking place. Recently, that also was cleaned.
Okay. All right. Now, previously you mentioned, there's actually a question really simply asking, you know, how does the mother relate to the cosmos? And I know that previously you mentioned on this show that really, you know, well, they are like her children and that they actually have grown up now. So what does that mean to say that they've grown up?
Well, it means that, number one, the codependent and in some instances the totally dependent relationship that people have had with God out there, it has to stop because it is infantile. The please save me. If I'm good, you'll save me. Or, listen, I lit all these candles, or I did all these masses, or I fasted in Ramadan, or whatever it is. So therefore, I'm good because I did this. You're going to love me. That's about what a five-year-old relates to their mother. You know, and the total dependency is what somebody that's 6 months old relates to their mother or father. And that is the way that we have been relating to that which gave us life. That never was intended to last. It's fascinating. But, you know, when we look at the history of how this cosmos began, how the cycles of the fall actually took place and so forth, we can trace very distinctly the exact same relationship and social and sexual stages that I've mapped out in Journey to the Heart of God, and I believe that they're mentioned also in the Secrets of the Hidden Realms, and also in the Gift of the Unicorns. They're very important. I discovered them in 2005 in January, and once I saw them, it was like the Fibonacci sequence. They were everywhere. Everything that grows and develops goes through these stages, from infantile to childhood to pre-adolescent to adolescent, and then into adulthood. The cosmos has recently been in adolescent stages, where there's just total rebellion. You know, they want the good stuff from the parents. They want to borrow the car. They want the pocket money. They don't want to have to earn it themselves. They want the nice clothes, but they don't want to do a thing the parent says. So that's the adolescent stages. And so, you know, Mother has wanted us to grow into adulthood, where we take control of our life enough that we don't blame someone else when something goes wrong, or beg for alms from the mother, like, may I please borrow the car? Sorry, you're 20 years old. Go out and earn your living and buy your own car. I will still help guide you. I might co-sign for the car, but you earn it, you take a job, and you pay your own gas, and you pay your own insurance. That's what the mother is now requiring of us. Any new stage isn't comfortable.
Right.
You know, but that is where we are currently in our evolution as a cosmos.
All right, but we probably still have to acclimatize to this sort of new stage, or...
Yes, exactly. Children do not like it when they're told they're out on their own for the first time.
All right. Okay, do we have time for the next question?
I think we have one more. Time for one more, then another commercial break.
Okay, well, this was just, I think this will be a very short one, simply about the Big Bang, which you mentioned earlier, because I was personally wondering how this sort of features in the story of creation. I mean, do you know if that was actually the beginning or simply a stage?
The Big Bang we experience was, in fact, a descension. It was when all life burst through a membrane into life below. So it's not necessarily the way creation took place. Creation took place in a far more orderly fashion. But during the cycles of the fall, we actually burst through that membrane, and I believe that some of this was discussed on previous shows by you and I, in fact, regarding how the fall started.
Yes. But
we gave some very preliminary, very, very sort of basic information. But what actually happened is that there was a tear that happened in the membrane, and life shot through and burst through as a Big Bang. We were then, we went through a Big Bang, and during the Big Bang, the Earth actually collided. She was called Tiamat at that point, which means Eternal Mother. But she collided with another planet, and, you know, it ruptured a piece of her off, and caused some debris. She ended up in another star system, and the Mormons actually have scripture that refer to this in the Pearl of Great Price, and we translated some of that scripture that was not previously translated in A Gift of the Unicorns, and then in the next book, which is Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revelations of the Mysteries of Isis. And we in each of those books translated a little tiny bit more of the papyrus scroll that the Mormon prophet Joseph Smith purchased from somebody that brought it from Egypt. And it speaks about the solar system of Kolob and Ulibleesh, or Belish, I guess is what it's called, sorry. I know that other planet in the ancient language is called Melaganiga. And so the Melaganiga and the Ulibleesh, it's the same planet, but they are a binary star system. And those are the two stars around which about, I can't remember how many, 14 or so planets were rotating. The Earth was part of that. Then it was shot out of that star system, and it actually went through several star systems before it finally ended up here. But that's what the Big Bang that we know of is.
Wow, and it's interesting.
Yes. Creation
All right.
happens with beautiful, orderly geometry.
Well, that's good to know. Next question.
Yes. Actually, you know what? Let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power, Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back. My name is Almaine, and you have joined us on the mystical world we live in, discovering the secrets of the hidden realms. Rogier, thank you for joining us today, and we have about 8 minutes of show left. Could you come up with a nice question for our listeners?
All right. Well, actually, I thought you might clarify something you mentioned earlier, namely the fusion of the physical and the etheric, and I think this is actually what's referred to, entailed by the idea of the New Jerusalem. So I thought that maybe you could elaborate a bit on that one.
Yes. The predominant factor in my work during the past years has been to create a bridge between what is our etheric realms and our physical realms. Because the Earth is this cradle of civilization, there is a palace on Earth that is called the New Jerusalem in Revelations, and it awaits the time that we become so highly spiritualized that we can, in fact, see and interact with the etheric realms in the physical, meaning that the etheric body of the Earth, which are lines of light, that the etheric body of the Earth and the physical body actually is in one place. Now, who represents the physical body is humankind. Who represents the etheric body are the people inside the hollow earth. The actual truth of it is that every single planetary body is hollow, and many civilizations live on the inside of those planets. In Secrets of the Hidden Realms, we have discussed how, Germans in the 16th century migrated and they went up the Amazon and actually found themselves in a tunnel that came out the other side of the earth. Some of them came back, and when they went into Hitler's offices, they found multiple maps of the inner earth. But we have discussed the populations there. We have given their clock. We have given their way of life. We have explained that many of them are much taller than we are because they came from Atlantis, and they could see that great catastrophes were coming and went into the hollow earth. Some of them, like the giants that are there, and there are two sizes of giants, but the larger giants, that there are a few hundred of them in the inner earth only, but they came anciently from Lemuria. The land was then called Shalmali. We have given the Atlantean alphabet and numerical system, and we've also given the Lemurian alphabet and numerical system, and this is in Secrets of the Hidden Realms. So these people inside the hollow earth represent the etheric realms. Many light workers are waiting for partners to show up. That's because their partners are actually in the inner earth. But they will come at some point onto the outer earth. And interestingly enough, again, Mormon scriptures have prophesied about this. Some of the older religions have spoken about this. For instance, the 10 lost tribes in Judaism, they're in the hollow earth. And they are still speaking a form of Hebrew. And we've given their information. They're possibly some of the shortest people that are there, and where they live and so on. We've given the maps. But they will be coming onto the outer earth. That will coincide with the etheric and the physical blending, because they represent the physical, they represent the etheric, we represent the physical. Why is my tongue tying over this? Let's go on to the next question.
In the inner earth, are they actually physical or are they etheric?
They're both. There are beings that live at a higher level up, and they are etheric, and then there are beings that live at a lower level, and they are physical. Now, we describe what we discuss as the greatest miracle of Earth that happened approximately 28 years ago, when there was major cataclysms that happened inside the inner Earth, and that Mother herself spoke to them, and that they heard her voice, and that a majority of them actually went into God consciousness, meaning they no longer identify with their body and ego as the self. And so the maps are completely different now, because although so few of them lost their lives because of this miracle, nevertheless the land masses have changed, so those old maps are obsolete.
All right, and what does it concretely mean to, how would we experience that when the physical and the etheric fuse or merge?
There are lines that lie around the planet for each species. They are like linear grids. In actual fact, that is the etheric body, because if you look at our body, if the etheric body, which the Russians now have the technology to light up, actually, and illustrate, and then they use ion treatment to strengthen meridians that appear weak, but our etheric body are lines of bluish light. The grids around the planet are lines of bluish light, and each one of them containing information of how that species should live. Those lines of light will collapse into the earth. that's what it will look like. We could have grids around the planet.
But does that mean that our sort of daily experience, you know, how we experience the physical would be different than that we do now?
Well, the clamor of the dialogue would be different. That will initiate the golden reign of the mother and father on Earth. And their reign is not just of the Earth, it's of the cosmos. Currently, they are reigning in the cosmos. It's just that humanity in its density doesn't yet know it. The Book of Life that's been written is the laws of existence. It's mentioned several times in the scriptures in the New Testament. But so, life will be different. I mean, can you imagine seeing a city materialize, perhaps hovering 40 feet above the ground or whatever, of, you know, shimmering light? Many of the scriptures speak of the city, not just revelations. There are Mormon scriptures that speak of the New Jerusalem. They just think of it as being Mormon territory in, I believe, Ohio, Jackson County or something, or Clay County. I'm not sure where, but they think that's where it's going to be. But this is exactly what, you know, would change humanity, because the technology, the free energy that's provided, what government would not want their people to have it? And so a more benign and friendly way of life for all creatures should be ushered in as a result. It's because basically what I'm saying is it breaks the tyranny of the left brain. But Rogier, I see we're up with our time and it's time to close. Thank you so much to our listening audience, because it is your presence that makes these shows possible. Please join us again next week.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, The Mystical World We Live In, with Al Mead. Please join us again next week.